Reach in your pocket and pull out the small black slab of glass and aluminum that you carry there. Hold it in your hand for a moment. Tap the screen, wake it up, watch the icons appear. That little machine you're holding is running, by recent count, somewhere between 30 and 50 distinct pieces of software written in a single 50-year-old programming language. The photos you have taken today live inside a database called SQLite, the most widely deployed database in the world, written in that language. The system that wakes up the screen, manages the radio that talks to the cell tower, decides how much battery to spend on each app, is a piece of software called a kernel, and the kernel is written in that language too. The browser you use, the one that has been making all the news the past few years about being broken into in clever ways, sits on top of a stack of network plumbing also written in that language. Even the small piece of code that taps a polite little message into the wires of the satellite that is right now beaming maps to your phone is almost certainly written in that same language. The language is called C. It is older than most of the engineers who use it today. It is, by almost any measure, the most important programming language ever invented. Roughly 70% of all serious operating system software in the world, the kind that touches a chip directly and tells it what to do, is written in C. The cars that drove you home tonight, the airplanes that carry mail across the country, the pacemakers that quietly keep certain people's hearts in rhythm, all run on C. It is everywhere. It is invisible. And it is the language that Rust, the language this show is named for, has finally begun to displace, gently, in places where its quiet cost has become too high to bear. The story of how C took over the world and what that cost turned out to be starts in a quiet brick building in New Jersey half a century ago, with two engineers and a refrigerator-sized computer. This is Rust, gently, a patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 23, the C language. Today I want to tell you about the language Dennis Ritchie wrote in that long room in 1972, because almost everything you touch on a computer, every phone you use, every car you drive, every airplane you board, every hospital you visit, runs on top of software that was at some point written in his language. By the end of this episode, you will understand why C took over the world, why nothing replaced it for 50 years, what the hidden cost of that 50-year reign turned out to be, and why, after all that time, a different language finally walked through the door C had been quietly holding shut. Let me back up and explain why a language like C had to exist at all. In the years before C, if you wanted to write something serious, something close to the hardware, something that ran fast, you wrote in assembly. Assembly is the language of the machine itself, a very thin layer over the raw instructions the processor understands. You write something like, move this value here, add that value to it, jump back to the beginning if it is not zero. There is no music in it, no abstraction, no sense of a story. There is just a long list of small motions. The trouble with assembly, as I said a minute ago, is that every kind of computer has its own assembly, and so a program written for one machine cannot run on another without a complete rewrite. As the 1960s turned into the 1970s, the number of different kinds of computers in the world was multiplying, and the cost of rewriting serious programs for each one was becoming unsustainable. On the other side of the field, there were languages already designed to be portable. Fortran for scientists, COBOL for business, Lisp for the artificial intelligence researchers. These languages would run on many machines, but they were, for the purposes of writing the inner heart of an operating system, too slow, too high level, too far from the metal. You could not write Unix and Lisp, not really. The translation would put too much distance between you and the chip. You needed something in between, something that could compile down to assembly as efficient as the assembly a careful human would write, but that read on the page like a language a thoughtful human would actually want to read. Ritchie's language was that in-between thing. He started from an earlier language called B, written by Ken Thompson, and refined it through several iterations until it had a shape he was happy with. By 1973, Ritchie and Thompson had done something that, at the time, sounded crazy. They had rewritten the Unix operating system itself, the whole thing, in the new language. They called the language C. The book that defined it, written by Ritchie and his colleague Brian Kernighan, was published in 1978. Programmers still call it K and R after the two authors, and it is one of the slimmest, clearest, most influential technical books ever written. Three properties made C the language that ate the world. The first is that C is small. The grammar of C, the rules for how the language fits together, is genuinely tiny. A patient reader can learn the whole shape of it in a couple of weeks. There's almost nothing hidden. What you write is more or less what runs. The second is that C is fast because C does almost nothing on your behalf. A variable in C is just a slot in memory the size of a machine word. A pointer in C is just a memory address. An array in C is just a contiguous run of bytes. There is no thick layer of bookkeeping between your program and the chip. Whatever the chip can do, your C program can do with very little overhead. This is what people mean when they say C is close to the metal. It is, in some honest sense, a portable assembly. The third is that C is portable. Because the language was deliberately small, and because the parts of it that touch the hardware are kept in a tiny corner of the implementation, a new compiler for a new chip is a tractable project, not a heroic one. Over the years that followed 1973, compilers for C were written for nearly every processor that mattered. The same C program, with very few changes, could run on the giant mainframes of the early days, the workstations of the 80s, the personal computers of the 90s, the phones of the 2000s, and the embedded chips of the 2010s. No other system's language has ever achieved that kind of reach. Once C had Unix, and Unix had C, the two of them spread together through the universities of the 1970s and 1980s into industry, into the lineage of operating systems that became BSD, that became Mac OS, that became Linux. The Linux kernel, the heart of nearly every server on the modern internet, every Android phone, every smart television, every car infotainment system, is written in C, roughly 28 million lines of it. The database called PostgreSQL is C. The database called SQLite, which is the most widely deployed database engine on Earth, present in every iPhone and every Android and every browser and every commercial aircraft, is C. The web server called Nginx is C. Redis is C. Git is C. The C Python interpreter that runs every Python program you have ever heard of is itself written in C. The compilers that compile other languages, including most of the modern ones, are themselves written in C or in C++, which is a close cousin. The list goes on and on and on, in every direction. The world's most important software, the load-bearing software underneath everything else, is by a very wide margin, still C. That is the upside. Now let me tell you about the cost. The cost is memory bugs. Because C does almost nothing on your behalf, because a pointer is just a memory address, and the language will let you point it almost anywhere and read or write almost anything, mistakes in C have a particular and dangerous shape. A buffer holds, let us say, 100 bytes of text, and a careless line of code asks the program to write 120 bytes into it. The extra 20 bytes go somewhere they should not have gone, and now the program is silently corrupted in a way it will not notice until much later, possibly in a way an attacker can exploit. A piece of memory gets freed, returned to the pool, and another part of the program is still holding a pointer to it and tries to read from it, and the result is whatever happens to be there now, which might be the wrong customer's password or the wrong account balance. Two parts of the program try to update the same piece of memory at the same time, and the result is garbled. These bugs are called, collectively, memory unsafety, and they are the dominant failure mode of an entire generation of system software. Microsoft's security team disclosed at a conference in 2019 that roughly 70% of all security vulnerabilities they had patched over the previous 12 years were memory safety issues. The Chromium team at Google reported the same number around 2020. Apple has acknowledged similar figures for the operating system inside the iPhone. The Heartbleed bug of 2014, which exposed private keys and passwords on huge swaths of the internet for years before anyone noticed, was a memory safety bug in a C library called OpenSSL. A small mistake in a piece of code that handled keep alive messages, a few lines really, leaked the contents of server memory to anyone in the world who knew to ask for it. And almost no one did know to ask for it until 2 years after the bug had been quietly shipped. The WannaCry ransomware of 2017, which crippled the United Kingdom's National Health Service for several days and forced hospitals to turn away patients, exploited a memory safety bug in a Windows networking component written in C. The pattern is so consistent, so well documented, that the security community has long since stopped treating it as a discovery. It is simply the ambient cost of writing the world's most important software in C. For decades, the response to this cost was, more or less, to live with it. Better tools were built. Stricter testing was added. Security teams grew. Bug bounties were paid. None of those things solved the problem, because the problem was not careless engineers. The problem was the language, and the way the language let entire categories of mistake exist in the first place. Several languages tried to replace C over the years, and each one failed for a specific reason. Java was safer, but it had a garbage collector and could not run a kernel. Go was safer and also had a garbage collector. C++ added abstractions on top of C, but kept the same memory model and therefore the same family of bugs. Ada was safe and used in defense work, but never escaped that niche. And then, slowly, over many years, a different idea was being worked out in a folder on a laptop in an apartment in Vancouver. The engineer was Graydon Hoare. The language he was writing was Rust. Rust, as we covered some episodes ago, is the language that finally proposes a third way. It matches C on speed. It matches C on closeness to the hardware. It runs without a garbage collector. And by the careful structure of its rules, it makes the entire family of memory bugs that have plagued C software for 50 years impossible at compile time. The compiler simply refuses to build a program that contains those bugs. There is no buffer overflow you can sneak past it. There is no use after free it will let you ship. The door that C had been quietly holding shut for half a century, the door labeled fast and safe, is the door Rust finally walked through. You will hear, sometimes, that Rust is going to replace C. That is not quite the right way to put it. C is not going anywhere. There are tens of billions of lines of C in the world, more being written every day, and a great many of them will keep running long after you and I are gone. What is true is that for the first time in 50 years, when a serious team starts a new piece of system software, they have a real choice, and that choice is starting to fall to Rust more often than it falls to C. The change is not sudden. It is the slow turning of a very large ship. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that C is, by an enormous margin, the most important programming language ever written, and most of the software you depend on every day, including the operating systems on your phone and your computer, the databases behind your bank and your hospital, the web servers behind your favorite websites, and the embedded controllers inside your car and your appliances, is written in C or in its close descendants. The second is that C earned its place by being small, fast, and portable, by being a thin, honest layer over the machine itself. The third is that this thin, honest layer comes with a cost, a family of memory bugs that account for roughly 2/3 of all serious security vulnerabilities across the industry, and that for 50 years, no language was able to match C strengths while removing that cost. The language that finally did is Rust. Next time on Rust, gently, we will look at the second half of the 20th century story The other answer the industry tried to memory bugs, the garbage collector. We will meet the man who invented it in 1959. We will follow it through Java, and in a go, we will see the famous graph that Discord posted in 2020, and we will understand why Rust's third way is genuinely a third way and not just a polished version of one of the older two. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.